Good morning, brothers and sisters. Today we're going to be starting a series on the book of Nehemiah. I'm really excited to get into this series because Nehemiah is a book all about restoration and renewal. In this book, God is working in the hearts of the people of Nehemiah's day, taking them from a place of apathy and complacency to a place of devotion and passion for him. That's what I want in my life too, and I pray that God will use this book and this series to do just that in our hearts. Nehemiah takes place after the Israelites' exile in Babylon. The exile was 70 years of spiritual dryness. No temple, no sacrifices, no Passover, no promised land. The people were separated from God physically and spiritually. And hundreds of years before the exile, it had been a time of spiritual disaster. Israel was led by worldly kings who took the people's hearts away from God and to idols. But now, after dryness and disaster, God is moving. God is stirring up the hearts of the people, turning them toward him. He's taking them back to the promised land, and they're starting work on the temple so worship can begin again. After the dryness, God is sending spiritual rain and reviving and revitalizing his people. Ezra and Nehemiah both focus heavily on this idea of renewal. And in Hebrew, they were originally one book, so we'll be referencing Ezra a lot in this series as well. Ezra focuses primarily on rebuilding the temple, while Nehemiah focuses on the city of Jerusalem itself, rebuilding the walls and gates, and then on spiritual renewal among the people. Now, Nehemiah is one of the lesser-known historical books, but I believe that it is one of the most timely and relevant books for the church today. And there's two reasons for that. First, we need renewal in our churches. The church in Canada is declining. By the statistics, the number of people who call themselves Christians shrinks every year. And that's the number of people who call themselves Christians. Much smaller are the people who actually attend worship service, and even smaller are the people who really have a heart for God and are passionate for him. The church in Canada is plagued with apathy. So many Christians are living by the world's values, chasing wealth and comfort and affluence and self rather than God. Most Christians come to church on Sunday and forget about God the rest of the week. Many congregations have aging populations and are unsure if they will survive another generation. What God did with Israel in Nehemiah's day, we need him to do today. We need widespread renewal in the church, a return to passion for God, a return to a church that is growing and serving and doing outreach and drawing in the younger generations. After our period of spiritual dryness, we need God to send the rain of revitalization to our congregation here at OMA and to the whole church in Canada. And second, we need renewal in our personal lives. We all go through periods of spiritual dryness. We said the church in Canada is plagued with apathy, and I think many of us, myself included, have more of that than we want. This is a great time to really examine yourself and honestly think where your prayer life is at. Is it where you want it to be? It's a good time to look at how often are you studying God's word on your own. It's a time to ask, do you feel a burning passion for God? Are you craving his word every day? Are you on your knees begging for his grace because you know he's the only one who sustains you? Maybe recently we've been a little too spiritually comfortable. I know I have. Maybe there's a little too much apathy in our spiritual lives. If you're in a time of spiritual dryness, then this is the book for you. This is exactly what Nehemiah is about. And this is exactly what we're going to be talking about in this series. We want God to work in our hearts and cultivate that passionate life that we were just describing. There's a beautiful verse in Hosea 10:14. Break up your fallow ground, for it is time to seek the Lord, that he may come and rain righteousness upon you. That's what we want, for God to rain righteousness, for him to send the spiritual rain of renewal on our lives and on our churches. I pray he would do that through our passage today. So let's get into the text. Open your Bibles to Nehemiah chapter 1. Now, as we begin our series on this book, we need to go in with a good understanding of who Nehemiah is. By the time of these events, there had already been two large waves of returns to the Promised Land, one led by Zerubbabel and one led by Ezra. In both cases, anyone who wanted to could freely return, but many chose to stay behind in Babylon, whether because they had successful businesses or because their families were well-established and connected. They chose not to leave. Nehemiah was one of those who chose to stay behind. He was currently living in Susa, the capital of the Persian Empire, and he was quite well off there. He was cupbearer to the king of Persia. Now, the cupbearer wasn't a menial servant position who poured drinks. He was responsible for testing the king's wine for poisoning, as well as guarding the royal chambers. Cupbearers were entrusted with the king's life. They were among the most trusted officials in the whole empire, and they would have enjoyed extensive influence with their masters. So Nehemiah was no unimportant person, and he was in a position to be used powerfully by God. Now the story begins with Nehemiah getting a visit from his brother Hanani. Hanani was one of the Israelites who had chosen to return to the Promised Land. Now he comes back to Susa for a visit, and we see right away that although Nehemiah chose to stay behind, he's very concerned for the welfare of God's people. He immediately asks his brother how things are going in Jerusalem. Even though the Promised Land is 1,000 miles away, and he's probably never been there in his life, he cares deeply about his fellow Israelites, and he cares deeply about the restoration efforts there. So he asks his brother how things are going, and he was probably expecting a pretty positive response. You know, maybe there are a few problems, but by and large, things are going well, and God is accomplishing great things among us. It was a safe assumption to make, because by the time of Nehemiah, things should have been going well. Ezra tells the first half of the story, and the story started out well. By intervening through the rulers Cyrus and Darius, God had let his people return to the Promised Land. He had been working in their hearts. They'd been worshiping him, obeying the law as best they could, and they'd been going to rebuild the temple and then rebuild the holy city. The process of renewal was well on track to succeed. But when Hanani relays the news to Nehemiah, it paints quite a different picture. Those who survived the exile and are back in the province are in great trouble and distress. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down, and its gates have been burned with fire. The Israelites who have returned, Hanani says, are in worse trouble than they'd faced in Babylon. The wall of Jerusalem, which in Nehemiah is really the symbol of the restoration, was in ruins. The city was in shambles, the gates were broken, and the inhabitants were defenseless. For a city to be without walls was for it to be completely vulnerable to attack. What happened to the rebuilding? How did the restoration grind to a halt? Well, we learn how this came about in Ezra chapter 4. The enemies of the Jews sent a letter to Artaxerxes and got him to order the rebuilding to stop. Verse 21, Artaxerxes writes, "Now issue an order to these men to stop work so that this city will not be rebuilt until I so order." And they did just that. Verse 23, they went immediately to the Jews in Jerusalem and forced them and compelled them by force to stop. Now that tells us why the renewal efforts ground to a halt, but it also tells us that the returned exiles had a lot of enemies who were not above resorting to force, to physical violence, to stop them. Meaning that if their city was defenseless, they were in a lot of danger. One attack was all it would take, and it didn't have to be a well-planned attack or a huge army. They were completely vulnerable. The restoration community that had returned so hopeful was now a hair's breadth from being wiped out. Hanani mentioned this great military danger they faced, but that wasn't the only trouble plaguing the Israelites. We're going to see throughout the book that there were a number of spiritual problems too. We're going to see later that they were abusing and exploiting the poor among them. They were abandoning their calling to be holy and were intermarrying with the nations around them and adopting their practices. They weren't giving the allotted portions to the Levites, so the Levites had to abandon the house of God to work on their own fields for a living. They were disobeying the Sabbath so they could make more money that day. All the passion and obedience that had marked the beginning of the restoration had faded. The renewal had started, and the renewal had failed. Everything had begun so well in Ezra, but it all fell apart because of external oppositions from their enemies and because of the people's own neglect of obeying God. The spiritual rains of renewal had ceased, and they were back in spiritual dryness. In fact, times were drier and more desperate now than they had been in Babylon. The need for renewal and restoration was greater than ever. Well, how could they find that? Where does renewal come from? How could the struggling Israelites of Nehemiah's day be revived once more? And how can we do that too? In the midst of our spiritual dryness, where will renewal come from? How can we find restoration and revival for our nation, for our congregation, and for each one of our lives? Well, that's the question that the rest of this chapter answers. And we'll see that it gives us a two-part answer. So there'll be 2 points in this sermon. Point one, renewal and restoration come from God. Renewal and restoration come from God. I want us to notice what's the first thing that Nehemiah does upon hearing the news about Jerusalem. Verse 4, when I heard these things, I sat down and wept. For some days I mourned and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. The first thing he does, he turns to God. He mourns and fasts and prays, and the entire rest of the chapter is a record of one of those prayers. In it, he praises God. He appeals to God's faithfulness. He confesses the sins of the Israelites and his own sins. He reminds God of his promises, and he asks God to intervene. Besides being a great model of prayer, it highlights a major truth of this passage. One of the key principles throughout Ezra and Nehemiah is that restoration comes from God. It's not something we can fabricate or manufacture. It's not an artificial, man-made thing. Renewal is transformation of the heart. Renewal is the changing of lives on a national and individual scale. That's not a man-made thing. That's not something the church board can get together and decide to do. That's a God-made thing. True renewal and spiritual revitalization can only come from God. As that Hosea quote says, we can break up our fallow ground, but the spiritual rain comes from God. Now, can we be used by God to do these things? Absolutely, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But the origin is not from us, and that's a very important distinction to keep in mind. Renewal and restoration will always come from God. And that's why Nehemiah turns to God in prayer. He's acknowledging his dependence on God. He's acknowledging, I can't fix this broken situation. I'm just a human being. I'm nothing. But you are God. You are everything. You can. So then he asks God to do just that. He understands that if Artaxerxes' heart is going to be moved to change his decree, if the hearts of the Israelites are going to be moved to return to God, then that will be by the work of God in their hearts. And this is one place where Ezra is a very helpful parallel. So let's turn in our Bibles briefly to Ezra chapter 1. This idea that restoration comes from God is the point of that entire chapter. The book of Ezra begins with a record of King Cyrus's decree, where he allows the Israelites to return to the promised land. This decree is actually recorded a couple times in Scripture, 2 Chronicles as well, because it's so important. This is what allowed the Israelites to go back to the promised land in the first place. Without this decree, there is no restoration. So this is crucial. And notice, what does the first verse of Ezra say? The Lord moved the heart of King Cyrus of Persia to make a proclamation throughout his realm. God moved Cyrus's heart to do this. This decree came because of God. The opportunity, the occasion for renewal was provided by God. Without him acting, there would have been no restoration. In verse 4 of Ezra, God goes a step further. Cyrus writes, "And in any locality where survivors may now be living, the people are to provide them with silver and gold, with goods and livestock, and with freewill offerings for the temple of God in Jerusalem." God has Cyrus provide them with all the materials and resources they need for the work of restoration. Then take a look at verse 5, one of my favorite verses in Ezra. "Then the family heads of Judah and Benjamin, and the priests and Levites, everyone whose heart God had moved, prepared to go up and build the house of the Lord in Jerusalem." Isn't that amazing? God moved the hearts of the people to return. The Israelites who chose to return did so because God had stirred up their hearts. It all comes from him. During times of restoration, God is the one who stirs up the hearts of leaders to lead the restoration and stirs up the hearts of the people to follow. When people are being transformed, it is because God is working in their lives. When revival sweeps across a congregation or a nation, that is because God is working powerfully among them. The first chapter of Ezra couldn't make it any more clear that restoration comes from God. So if there was going to be any restoration in Nehemiah's day, it would have to come from God too. If anyone's heart is going to be stirred up, it would come from him. If there would be any granting of favor from rulers again, if there would be any revival or transformation, it would come from the Lord. That's what his prayer is acknowledging. When Nehemiah hears the news, he doesn't go about industriously making plans to manufacture renewal. He falls to his knees and turns to God. We cannot transform hearts. This sermon series isn't go home and try harder so you can achieve personal renewal. This series isn't here are the 12 principles of church growth so we can create national renewal in Canada. At its core, this series is about us depending on God. God's the one who changes people's hearts. God's the one who transforms lives. God is the one who creates national revitalization in his people. Jesus says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." The poor in spirit means those who recognize their spiritual poverty, their spiritual bankruptcy. They recognize that they can do nothing. They recognize that they are dependent on God for everything. If we want renewal, this is the first step. Recognizing our spiritual poverty. Recognizing that God is the one who can save us. Who are the people whom God will bless? Who will inherit the kingdom? The poor in spirit. The people who can truly say to God with all their heart, "I have nothing. I am nothing. But you are everything." You know what else Jesus says? "My grace is sufficient for you. For my power is made perfect in weakness." When we come before God and we acknowledge that we can't change our hearts, that we are broken, and that we need him, that is when we create space for him to move in our lives. When we acknowledge that we can't manufacture renewal in our congregation, that is when we open the door for him to move powerfully among us. We go about so set on doing things ourselves. "I'm going to try harder. I'm going to do better." But in doing so, we're really telling him, "I'm going to give this one a try by myself." That's not what God blesses. God blesses the poor in spirit. God gives renewal and restoration to those who ask him to do it because they recognize that he is the only one who can. If you want renewal in your spiritual life, then get on your knees and start praying. If we want renewal in our congregation here, then we need to get on our knees together and start praying. Let's ask God to move the hearts of ourselves and of all Canada to return to him. Let's ask God to stir up the hearts of leaders to lead Canada in a renewal. Let's ask God to transform our church into a thriving, growing, passionate community of believers dedicated to serving and to loving our holy God. Let's come before God in poverty of spirit so that in our weakness, he will be all the stronger. So point one, renewal and restoration come from God. But point two, God chooses to work through people. God chooses to work through people. Nehemiah embodies both of these principles so humbly and so well. Nehemiah's first response was to turn to God in dependence and say, "Only you can do this." But his second response was to offer himself to God as a servant and say, "Here I am, use me." Take a look at the ending of his prayer. Verse 11. "Lord, let your ear be attentive to the prayer of this your servant and to the prayer of your servants who delight in revering your name. Give your servant success today by granting him favor in the presence of this man." Nehemiah asks God to act, but he asks God to act through him. He understood that God alone could change the situation, but he didn't use that as an excuse to do nothing. He calls himself God's servant, and he readily and humbly offered himself as a tool for God to use. He asked God to give him favor and use him to intercede before King Artaxerxes. This is where Nehemiah's cupbearer status comes into play. As a trusted official to the king, he could try asking Artaxerxes to change his mind and reverse the ban on construction in Jerusalem. Nehemiah understood that God had placed him in this position for a reason, and he was determined to do what he could. Now we see how this plays out in chapter 2 of Nehemiah. I'll just read the first few verses. "In the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was brought for him, I took the wine and gave it to the king. I had not been sad in his presence before. So the king asked me, 'Why does your face look so sad when you are not ill? This can be nothing but sadness of the heart.' I was very much afraid, but I said to the king, 'May the king live forever. Why should my face not look sad when the city where my ancestors are buried lies in ruins and its gates have been destroyed by fire?' The king said to me, 'What is it you want?' Then I prayed to the God of heaven, and I answered the king, 'If it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in his sight, let him send me to the city in Judah where my ancestors are buried, so that I can rebuild it.'" The passage goes on, and we'll get into that next time. But this is how God went about accomplishing the restoration. This was God's plan for renewal. God chose to work through Nehemiah. He uses Nehemiah to change Artaxerxes' mind in chapter 2, and then throughout the book, he's going to use Nehemiah powerfully as a leader within Israel, leading the efforts to rebuild the wall and convicting the people of their sin and taking them to repentance. God brings about the restoration through Nehemiah. And that's an important balance. The fact that only God can bring renewal doesn't mean that we should do nothing. We have to start by acknowledging our dependence on God, but then move to a place of humbly offering ourselves for use as God's servants. God chooses to work through people. If God is going to bring renewal today, then it will come through us. Now, if you're here today, then you want to be used by God. Now, maybe that's being a leader like Nehemiah. Maybe that's teaching children. Maybe that's being a light to your friends and coworkers. Maybe that's encouraging your brothers and sisters on their journeys of renewal, or whatever else you are called to do. We want to be used by God, but the question is how? Nehemiah was used powerfully by God, but not everyone is. In fact, most people aren't. So how can we be used powerfully by God to God's glory? What kind of person does God choose to work in? And how can we make our lives like that? Well, I think Nehemiah's life gives us the answer. First, God will work in someone who has a heart for him. One of the reasons Nehemiah is such a beautiful book is that in it we get an intimate look into the spiritual life of a profoundly faithful man. He records his thoughts, his prayers, his reflections. You can't come away from this book without seeing that Nehemiah had a heart for God. He was very close to the Lord, and he had a strong prayer life. In verse 4, we see him fasting and praying, and the prayer he records is so telling of a man devoted to God, but it's far from the only prayer in the book. I love the prayer in chapter 2, verse 4 that we saw. The king said to me, "What is it you want?" Then I prayed to the God of heaven, and I answered the king. It's just a brief little moment of prayer before answering the king. He doesn't even record the words. It was probably just a sentence or two, asking God for help in that moment. He didn't just make big, grand prayers at set times. He turned to God throughout the day, in little moments. And that continues throughout the book. Just in the middle of conversations, he adds a little one-sentence prayer to God. That's awesome. That's what it looks like to pray without ceasing, as 1 Thessalonians 5 commands us. Nehemiah had a heart for God, and that's one reason God used him powerfully. And this is, again, a place where Ezra is a great parallel, because Ezra was also used powerfully by God for renewal. And Ezra chapter 7 offers a great insight into why. Ezra 7:6 tells us, "He was a teacher well-versed in the law of Moses, which the Lord, the God of Israel, had given. He knew the scriptures inside and out." But notice, it wasn't just head knowledge, verse 10, "For Ezra had devoted himself to the study and observance of the law of the Lord, and to teaching its decrees and laws in Israel." We also see Ezra praying and giving praise to God in verses 27 to 28 of chapter 7. And there's a very excellent longer prayer recorded in chapter 9, verses 5 to 15 of Ezra. We see from the lives of both Ezra and Nehemiah that God will work in someone who has a heart for him. And second, God will work in someone who has a heart for his people. Nehemiah cared deeply about God's people. We saw it in his concern to learn about their welfare in verse 2, and then his reaction in verse 4 to hearing about their troubles, weeping, mourning, fasting, and praying. But we see it most of all in his willingness to help. We have to understand, he was taking a huge risk by interceding before the king. In Ezra 4, Artaxerxes had already been biased against the Jews. He was convinced that they had been rebuilding the city to rebel against him. He had been made to view them as a treasonous nation. Not only would it be very hard to change Artaxerxes' mind now, but if Nehemiah supported them, it could look like he was supporting treason. As the cupbearer, responsible for the king's life, if the king suspected him of treason at all, he was in a very dangerous situation. Persian kings could kill anyone on a whim, and Artaxerxes had a history of violence. Nehemiah was putting his life on the line to help the Jews in Jerusalem. These were people he didn't even know. He'd never been to the Promised Land in his life. Jerusalem was 1,000 miles away. He could have been concerned with his cupbearer career and earning favor with the king and his life here and now. When he got the news from his brother, he could have said, "That's really sad," but then got right on with his life. But he didn't. He was deeply concerned for the welfare of God's people, so much so that he was determined to help them even at the risk of his own life. And finally, and more simply, God will work in someone who wants to be used. Nehemiah, in his prayer, offered himself to God. He wanted to be used and came before God and asked God to use him to help the Israelites. I think the verse in Esther 4:14 is very appropriate here. "If you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this?" Nehemiah had come to his royal position as cupbearer for this time exactly. However, if Nehemiah had chosen to stay silent, God would have used someone else. God will always save his people through one means or another. But because Nehemiah had a heart for God, a heart for God's people, and because he wanted to be used, God did use him powerfully to accomplish great things. God will work to bring renewal in his people today, and he wants to do it through you. He wants to use you to reach the people around you, to strengthen your brothers and sisters, to be a light to your neighbors and friends, to serve him with whatever gifts he has given you. So let's become the kind of people that he will use powerfully. Let's have a humble heart for God, a concern for God's people, and the courage to offer ourselves for him to use. If we don't have these yet, that's okay. He will help us cultivate these. Just ask him. Come to him in poverty of spirit, saying, I don't have the courage to be used. I feel afraid. Or, I want to have a heart for you, but I'm struggling. And ask him to work in you. God wants to work through us. But in the words of Mordecai, if we remain silent, renewal for the church will arise from a different place. But that's not what we want. We want him to use us. So let's offer ourselves willingly. So, how will renewal come to our spiritual lives? How will renewal come to our congregation? How will renewal come to the church in Canada? It will come from God working through us. Renewal and restoration come from God alone, but God chooses to work through people. So let's get on our knees and start praying that God would bring revival and renewal as the only one who can do that. Let's ask him to move powerfully across our nation, in our church here, and in each of our lives. And in those prayers, let's offer ourselves as servants for God to use. Break up your fallow ground, for it is time to seek the Lord, that he may come and rain righteousness upon you. Let us break up the fallow ground in our life and in our church, and God will send the spiritual rains of renewal.